You're listening to Season 2, Episode 14 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang. Am I doing this right?
Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, Storyteller Tribe! Before we get into today's interview, I wanted to thank Gotham Writers for sponsoring today's episode. They teach creative writing classes in New York City and online and have built an incredible writing community. Be sure to hang around at the end of the show to find out why Gotham has earned an amazing reputation within the writers community. I'm so honored to have RJ Palacio on the show with us today. RJ is the number one New York Times bestselling author of Wonder, a middle grade novel that sold over a million copies in 18 months. A super quick overview about the book, the main character August Pullman was born with a facial difference that up until now has prevented him from going to a mainstream school. Starting fifth grade at Beecher Prep, Augie wants nothing more than to be treated as an ordinary kid, but his new classmates can't get past Augie's extraordinary face. Entertainment Weekly says Palacio has written a crackling page-turner filled with characters you can't help but root for. RJ's book is now being adapted into a movie by Lionsgate. According to a very recent article published in The Wrap, Jacob Tremblay, the adorable little boy who starred in Room, a movie nominated for Best Picture during the Oscars, is in talks to star in Wonder. It's also mentioned that the studio has its sights set on Julia Roberts to play the main character's mom. In today's episode, RJ and I discuss a whole lot about Wonder, what it means to choose kind, and we dive into invaluable writing advice. We're doing a special giveaway to three lucky winners. We have a signed copy of three different books by RJ. The first one is called Wonder, the second one is called Augie and Me, and the third one is 365 Days of Wonder. To enter the giveaway contest, listen carefully to RJ's episode and put up a post on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram of your favorite quote from today's interview. Be sure to tag at 88 Cups of Tea and include hashtag 88 Cups of Tea in your post so I can find you. The lucky winners will win one of RJ's autographed books. The deadline for the giveaway contest is Wednesday, April 27th at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that's 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. All right, now let's jump right into our chat with RJ.
Hey, storytellers! I am so excited to have today's special author with us. RJ, how are you today?
I am so well. I'm so thrilled to be on your show.
Let's get started. I'd love to know what's one thing that's really exciting you in your work right now.
Well, I'm working on my new book, and it is not Wonder-related, and I have to say it's kind of exciting to be venturing into new terrain, which I can't talk about. Just because I'm still kind of forming it and thinking it through and stuff, but it's exciting to start exploring new characters and a different world.
Amazing. I'm so excited. Okay, so I won't ask questions. I will not pry, but I'd love to chat a bit about Wonder, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Amazing. So I know you had an incident at an ice cream shop with a little girl. Can you tell us about that incident and how it inspired you to write Wonder?
Well, I was with my two sons, and my older son was about 12 at the time, but my younger son was only about 3. And he was still in a stroller, and while my older son went inside the ice cream store to get us some chocolate milkshakes, my younger son and I waited out front. He was just looking down at his board book and not really sort of noticing what was going around. But I realized at a certain point that sitting right next to me was a little girl. I'd say she was probably around 5 or 6, maybe 6 or 7, I don't know. And she was with her mom and I guess either a sister or a friend. And anyway, she had a facial difference very much like the one I describe Augie as having in the book. And at that moment, I did kind of panic because I knew that the moment my 3-year-old looked up and saw her, that he might say or do something that might hurt her feelings. You know, I had a feeling that he would probably start to cry or he'd certainly react in a very obvious way. And we were in such close proximity to her that I thought at the time that the best thing I could do was kind of very calmly and without drawing any attention to us, just walk away and try to avoid the whole situation. But unfortunately, exactly what I was afraid would happen did end up happening. My younger son did look up before I was able to move us away. He did start to cry. And at that point, I kind of panicked. I just kind of fled the scene as quickly as possible, pushed the stroller away. And as soon as I did it, I really regretted it. I realized that I just kind of blown it. As parents, we're always looking for these wonderful these situations in life that we could turn into teaching moments. Mm-hmm. And here one had presented itself to me, and I just kind of really blew it. Because afterwards, it occurred to me that what I should have done is I should have simply turned to the little girl and started up a conversation and shown my son by my example that there was nothing to be afraid of. But at the time, I honestly didn't have the wherewithal to do that. I panicked and I was afraid of hurting her feelings. And that incident got me thinking about what it must be like to be that girl, to have to face a world every day that doesn't know how to face you back, doesn't have the right language, doesn't have the preparation, doesn't really understand what you're going through. And I was also deeply moved by the girl's mom and the girl's friend or sister. And that just got me thinking about a lot of these themes of kindness and how I wished that I had responded from a place of kindness instead of a place of fear.
Yes, I do know that that's your main theme in your book, yeah. Choosing kindness instead of choosing right. And that really resonates with me because that's something that my mom teaches me and my younger sisters a lot our whole lives. And I really very much love the book. And I was super curious. So at that moment, did you overhear the mom say anything? I wonder what choice she made at that moment.
As I was leaving and sort of pushing my son away in the stroller, he's crying. And also my older son had come out of the ice cream store and had no idea what was going on and why we were leaving and all that was happening. I heard as I was pushing the stroller away, the little girl's mom say in a voice that I will never forget because it was full of such generosity and such kindness. She said, "Okay, girls, I think it's time to go."
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and I knew that she had seen everything that had happened. I don't honestly think that the little girl even realized what was going on. I really think it just went over her head. She was very young and she was talking. But I know that the mom knew very, very well what just happened. And there's so many ways she could have responded. I thought the gracefulness of her voice and the graciousness and the kindness was, it put me to shame. Honestly, I just thought she's so amazing. And as I was thinking and replaying that incident in my mind, I had all these other ways that whole scene could have played out. I could have gone back and apologized and she and I would have become best friends and, you know, we would be having coffee and, you know, I just had this whole other, I wished I'd done it differently. So Wonder really was kind of like a giant do-over for me.
The daughter is young.
Yeah.
How many years ago did this happen?
7 or 8 years ago.
Wow.
Wait, my math's terrible. Almost 9 years ago.
See, 9 years ago. So definitely her daughter is at that age where she definitely would have read this book. And it's in a way like a tribute to her. Did the mom write a letter to you, perhaps remembering that incident?
At this point, you can imagine like a lot of emails and a lot of emails from kids with craniofacial differences or the parents of kids with craniofacial differences, because those organizations have really, really embraced the book. And it's not a huge community, though it is a large community. And I have often wondered who that girl might be. But I also think, you know, my older son was, as I said, he was about 12 years old at the time. So he remembers that day. And even though the way I tell it, you know, in my mind, it all happened so slowly and in slow motion practically. And the reality of that, it happened so quickly that I'm not sure that it really kind of would have stuck out in the mind of this woman. I have a feeling that unfortunately, they probably deal with this kind of situation dozens of times a day. I mean, every time they go somewhere new, every time they go to a mall, every time they're on a bus or on a subway, you know, they have to sort of deal with these maybe awkward encounters and sometimes worse. So it may be that it didn't really even stick out in her memory. I'm not sure that it was that big a deal for her, right. Although for me, it was a big deal.
I do hope that if she does connect the pieces in the future, and even though it might not be a big deal to her, but suddenly it clicks, I hope she does connect with you and
that would be wonderful.
That you guys can become best friends, you know?
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
I know.
Now, RJ, I know that you mentioned the main theme of the book is to choose kindness. I'm sure you've made a lot of appearances and been to a lot of schools to chat with kids and teachers. Do you feel that at that age, they really understand and grasp the concept of choosing kindness over choosing being right?
I definitely do. I think, you know, it's a question of how we talk to kids, too. I mean, I've often said that I don't really believe that we can teach empathy, We can't even teach kindness. What we can hope to do as educators and parents is inspire it. Inspire it by our example, inspire it by storytelling, inspire it in our children, and kind of awaken what's already there. Because I'm completely convinced that the natural inclination for children is actually to be kind, to be affectionate with one another, to love unconditionally when they're very young. And then I don't know what happens, but at some point we just forget about imparting that to our children. I mean, your mom didn't, which is great, but I think a lot of parents, you know, we tend to focus a little bit more on, like, you know, did you do your homework and things like that, like academic. You know, you get lost in the details of scheduling soccer meets and all, you know, all of that stuff. And I think sort of imparting those basic things that we used to teach our kids when they were very young and toddlers playing in the sandbox, which is be nice, play nice, say thank you, say please, be a good friend, you know, all of those things that we sort of spent so much time hammering into our kids when they were really young, we don't focus on as much when they get into middle school. So when I go talk to kids, I have to say they're ready for it. I mean, they know exactly what I'm talking about. I try not to tell them, be nice, you know, don't be bullies, because they don't want to hear that, and then they tune out. What I do like to tell them are just stories of emails that I've gotten. You know, I tell them the story about this one email I got from a 92-year-old woman who had read Wonder and was reminded of an incident that had happened to her when she was 13 years old. A couple of girls were extremely unkind to her at a particular moment in her life when she needed anything but that. She needed kindness. And how she went on to have a wonderful life, but she still remembers that. And so, you know, I'll tell the kid, and I show the kids this picture of this woman she had sent me. And then I asked, do you want to be remembered 8 decades from now for being that mean kid? Or would you rather be remembered 8 decades from now, 80 years from now, for being the kid that kind of set it all aside and sat down with the new kid on the first day of school, or said congratulations to the losing team after a great basketball game, you know, or, you know, kid that went out of their way to be kind as opposed to the reverse.
RJ, have you ever been in a situation like Augie or that little girl in the ice cream shop? Even when you're younger, if you were bullied by any chance, or...
Yeah, no, I've been asked that a lot, and I can't say that I was ever bullied. Kids are sometimes unkind, but that doesn't make them bullies either. You know, there's a difference, and there is a line, and I think bullying is a very specific thing that happens when people aren't on equal ground, and one party inflicts a certain either humor or meanness or callousness or actual physical torment to the other person who can't defend themselves. And I was lucky in that growing up, I was never defenseless. I was a spunky, big-mouthed girl. I was also a nice girl. I'm sure that I wasn't perfect, and I'm sure that I had moments that I wish I could do over again, but they're not large in my memory as being one or the other. I think if I were to sort of think about the characters in the book and who I was most like when I was growing up, I'd have to say it was Charlotte. I wish I could say that I was as brave as Summer and that I would have gone out of my way to really be nice to the kids in the class who were the most downtrodden or the underdogs. But I wasn't. I don't think I was that courageous at that young age. I think I was more like Charlotte. I was never mean to anybody, always friendly, always nice. But I also never went out of my way to be anything other than nice. You know, I don't think I went out of my way to be kind to some of the kids that might have now in retrospect needed it. Did you ever hear that great speech that George Saunders gave at a college commencement address? He talked about what he regretted most in his life were those failures of kindness. What I regret more than anything are those moments that I could have been kinder and I wasn't.
You were mentioning the character Charlotte, and I'd love to flesh out a little bit more about how you created your characters. There is Charlotte who says hi and is nice, but not one to really reach out and say, hey, like, what's going on? But there's another character named Summer in your book who really goes out of her way, and it's just almost innate in her where she's just very, very, she's kind. She represents your whole theme of being kind. Where did you get the inspiration for these characters?
That night, I just turned on the radio just for the heck of it. And the first song that came on was a song that I knew so well because it was the song that I used. It was my cradle song for my older son. And the song was Wonder by Natalie Merchant. Song I must have sung to myself over and over again, like hundreds of times, honestly. It came out in 95. My son was born in 96. So it was our song. But that night when it came on the radio, I think the words, the lyrics just really resonated with me in a way that they never had before. Because, of course, I kept on thinking about this little girl. The theme of the song is just how doctors have come from distant cities just to see me. You know, this girl is born who's so different that she's considered a wonder. And she actually uses that difference to empower her, you know, and she is a wonder of God's own creation. So it was a combination of what had happened to me earlier that day or seeing that girl in the ice cream store and the song and the positivity of that song, because it's a very uplifting song. The feeling that this girl is going to be okay. With a little love and with faith, she'll be okay. That really filled me with great joy. And then I started writing that very night. I had a bunch of Post-it notes in front of me, and I just kind of started jotting down, "I know I'm not an ordinary kid," which became the first line of the book. And I kept writing. I was determined to finish this book.
So August Pullman, whose nickname is Augie, did he come to you full-fleshed in the back of your mind that evening?
The character of Augie, strangely enough, came to me very, very fully developed and very well-rounded. I found his voice right away. Maybe, you know, you asked before, was I ever the Augie Pullman? Was I ever bullied? And what I should have also said is that, no, I was never the Augie Pullman, but we all have been Augie Pullman on different days and at different points in our lives. You know, we've all known, most of us at least, have known what it's like to feel like they're the outsider, feel like they're not part of the popular group, feel like they're on the outs, you know, and feel different. And that is not a novel experience. That's a very universal experience. And it was that kind of experience that I was trying to tap into when I was writing Augie. So he came really, really naturally to me. I'm not sure why, but he came fully formed.
Did you already know that you were going to write from multiple different points of views through different characters? Or did that come about as you were writing along?
That came about as I was writing along. At first, I honestly thought it would just be a first-person narrative from Augie's point of view. And I also had no outline. I didn't know exactly where the story would go.
Oh, wow.
I had a sense of what I wanted. I wanted it to end on the last day of school in the fifth grade. But what would happen from day to day and week to week, I really didn't know. There came a point where the characters felt so real to me. Like, you create these characters and then they tell you what to do, you know? And you're just a court stenographer writing it down. That's the way it felt to me. They just kind of came to me. I can't even explain it. Very, very strange.
Characters like Julian and Summer and Charlotte, for example, and Via, Augie's sister Via, they weren't inspired by anyone in particular, were they?
But a lot of the characters I write are kind of mishmashes of people I know or people I knew. You know, even Augie, when I would think of Augie, he was kind of a mashup of my older son at times, you know, his interest in Star Wars and stuff, and a good friend of his at the time who was a kid really cute with hair that was always in his face, and he would mumble like under the hair and stuff. So whenever I would think of Augie, I'd think kind of these kids, you know, in my mind, kind of a mashup. And the same with Charlotte. Summer was actually based on a little girl I knew named Summer, who was honestly the cutest and sweetest kid, really so adorable and such a good and kind-hearted girl. But Jack Will was kind of a mashup of two little boys I knew. One was named Jack, the other was named Will. And some of the teachers were based on real teachers. Like Mr. Brown was based on my high school teacher named Mr. Brown. So those were kind of more easy because they, you know, they were minor characters, and I would just kind of start writing and someone would come to my mind and it would just be as if it was that person, what that person would say or do in a given situation. Via is the only character I would say that she came really, really naturally to me. And after the book came out, a dear old friend of mine who'd known me for many, many years, since I was 5 years old, said, "You know, Via's you, right?" And I'm like, "No, really? No, no." You know, and then I reread it. I'm like, "Oh my goodness, I didn't even realize." But it was me when I was 15 years old.
They know that a lot of writers have trouble working from different points of views and trying to make it all make sense and fit in the story rather than digressing. But you're able to have brevity, even though you're coming at it from all these different voices. I know that's a huge question, but if you can just show us a little bit of how your mind was working and how you're able to keep it focused and moving forward and carrying it along
without stopping it?
The day or the week I came to the decision to sort of open it up to different points of view, as somebody who has edited other people's books, I knew that that was a scary moment, because that's a moment when 40 or 50 manuscript pages that you've written could really, really derail and become unwieldy. So I was very strict with myself in terms of who we heard from and in terms of what they were meant to accomplish. Now, the criteria for me was, I will include a character if they can enhance or enlarge Augie's story, because ultimately Wonder is about Augie Pullman, about his journey in the fifth grade. So all the people we hear from are people who can expand the reader's understanding of Augie and something, and his journey towards self-acceptance and everything that happened to him. And I kind of thought of it as a relay race. You know, the story, Augie's story, was the baton. And then, you know, you have kind of characters everywhere along, stationed along the storyline, the narrative. And the idea was that one character would run in the race and then hand off the baton to the next character. Then they would keep carrying it, and then they would keep going, and so on and so forth until they got to the finish line. And with that sort of very, very strict criteria, I was able to keep myself disciplined enough, because it takes some discipline to not let the story overwhelm. Cut and cut and cut and edit and yeah. Say, no, this is not working. For the good of the story, this has to go. And so, you know, there was a lot of that that happened. Only time that I had real trouble, and, you know, I lost a couple of months of writing, was when I originally was planning on including Julian in the Wonder story. And I just came to this big halt. I mean, I had a whole backstory for him, but his backstory was so big in itself. It was kind of hijacking Augie's storyline. And then I realized the big problem with the character of Julian, who, for readers who haven't read it, you know, Julian is sort of the bully. He's the kid that is really mean consistently to Augie throughout the entire year. And I realized that the reason it wasn't working as part of Wonder was because Julian's big problem is that he never bothers to get to know Augie. And so in terms of Augie's story, he actually had nothing that he can give he could give the reader to help him understand Augie, because he himself didn't understand Augie. That was a really heady moment for me when I decided to cut Julian completely out. I knew he had a story, so I wanted to tell it at some other point, which is why I wrote the Julian chapter, which is a separate book, tells his story as opposed to him trying to tell Augie's story.
I love that image of passing the baton, and I will always remember that if I'm ever stuck on a situation with writing from different character point of views. I believe there was a question that someone asked you about how you ended the book, and you mentioned something like it's the prerogative of an author to tell whatever story they choose to tell.
Exactly.
And to end it where they want to end it.
Oh, I'm so glad I said that.
And that was so powerful. It's like there's so much agency in that, because it's very fascinating where you ended it. I know you wanted to end it on a higher, happier note. Now, why did you choose to end it that way specifically?
I mean, I've had people say it's too Hollywood, and as if this little boy, because he has a facial difference, can have a wonderful day. I mean, my whole intention with this story was to basically say that this kid, despite this boy has the heart and the gumption and the courage and everything he needs to make it. He'll be fine. You know, it'll be tough, but he'll be fine. And that's all I wanted to say, that look, he could survive fifth grade. And if he can do that, he's going to be fine. And that's all I wanted to say. And so when the people come at it as, well, you know, he can't have a happy life, or, you know, I think that's crazy. Now, I've met with so many families of real life Augies. They laugh at the absurdity, they cry, they find humor in it. They feel a range of emotions. You know, no one signs on to have to experience things in a specific way in life, but we deal with what we get. And these families deal with what they have. And they're not going to be miserable. They're not going to be unhappy. And of course their kids are fine. They're great. They deal with it. And sure, they have their share of stares and babies crying on occasion or not understanding. But they're a happy group. And I certainly wanted to tell a story that was full of positivity and hope for them, for all of us. I really didn't want to give into that sense of what I think is a little bit of cynicism, that one can't look the way Augie looks and expect to have a happily ever after story. That's nonsense. Of course he can have a happily ever after. He's the prince. He's not the frog. He's the prince, and he's the hero of his life. And it's joyful. And that's, I wanted to celebrate that. And of course, I gave him a happy moment to end the book on. But we can surmise from that that, you know, sixth grade will be much like fifth grade. It'll have its share of triumphs. It'll have its share of challenges. And so will high school, and so will college. He will get through it fine.
Your choice to end the story the way you did, it's in between the lines, and it's unspoken where Augie will be facing this, a lot of this, in the future. That is the way people, humans, should live, is to focus on the moment present. And that means also finding more joy and enjoying each little moment that we're living in. I love that choice that you made. So I just had to touch on that.
And thank you. You are so wise. Oh my goodness.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
You're so sweet. I also find really interesting was that you mentioned that this is your first published book, but that you've written a lot before. And I'd love to know how you first fell in love with writing.
I grew up in a house full of books. You know, my parents were both huge, huge readers. It was just kind of a given that the book was sort of the sacred object in our home. So I was always encouraged to draw and to write and to paint and to tell stories. And my parents acted like everything I ever wrote was absolutely unbelievable. And I, you know, silly little girl that I was, I completely believed them. You know, that kind of unconditional love really does a number on you. You really do think you can do anything. I knew I was going to grow up and be some kind of author, illustrator. You know, some of the books I loved so much were The Little Prince. And we just all assumed that that's what I was going to be when I grew up. I went to art school to study illustration. Right after I graduated from Parsons, I was getting illustration work. My chosen specialty was doing book covers because I really, really wanted to be involved in books and publishing and the written word, somehow combining that. And then I ended up getting a full-time job as an art director, a book designer at a publishing company. And in a way, it was kind of funny, that kind of my career, which really was supposed to be a stream of income for me while I went ahead and wrote on the side. But my career, my stream of income actually ended up kind of becoming very, very all consuming. And I was very lucky. I had a really, really good career and I did well quickly. And so I was an art director for a long time at a young age. And I was a closet writer for most of my life, as so many people in book publishing are. I was kind of doing my 9-to-5 book cover thing, which was a really, really wonderful way of honing one's craft as well. I mean, my 9-to-5 job was to read other people's manuscripts and try to think of what would make a good cover for them. You know, it was very interesting for me to see the editing process, because oftentimes I would be given a manuscript that no one else had seen but the editor. So I would see sort of the editor's red lines back to the author. And I learned a lot from seeing how other people edit books. I learned a lot as a writer.
Your book cover is so awesome. I want to know, did you have a say in that, or were you able to pick a team?
I did. I didn't design it. I purposely did not want my name on the book cover because I wanted my experience as an author to be purely that, to be an experience as an author. And I, you know, I was sort of over the novelty. I've probably done over 2,000 book covers in my life, and there was no novelty in seeing my name on the back flap of a book. Being a book designer is kind of a very thick skin, because everyone has an opinion about what makes a good book cover or not. When I was negotiating the contract with Random House, we were all aware of the fact that my career was in book jackets. And I'd done book jackets for everyone from Paul Auster to Salman Rushdie and Thomas Pynchon. And I think they expected me to want to do my book cover, but I really didn't want to. Having said that, I think if they had given me something that I really, really disliked, of course, I would have jumped in and designed my own cover. What was nice is that the art department worked with me. They came up with the concept of the face. It was a really, really wonderful and very collaborative process. I was really, and I still am, just because I've been in publishing, very deferential to the work that everybody else does. I've been in publishing long enough to have worked with some authors who aren't always as grateful as they could be for the opportunities that they're given. And I just, from the very beginning, wanted to give all the different people working on the book a chance to shine, whether it was the art department or the publicity people or the marketing people. You know, publishing a book really is a team effort and a partnership. And that's what a lot of people don't realize, just how invested people who work in publishing are in the books they publish. Not just the editors, but everybody. It's really a collaboration. And it's a beautiful experience to be part of the publishing of a book. So I wanted to give everybody at Random House the opportunity to do their thing as well. And just always remember to be grateful, because that's what authors should be, grateful.
I love where you're coming at it from. Talking about choosing kindness, you know, like that's awesome. RJ, I'm super curious. Did you have time to take any writing workshops, even writing retreats have you gone to that have inspired you and perhaps taught you some techniques of writing?
No, I'm a huge reader and a huge study of the craft of writing. And, you know, in that respect, I was raised by two parents who were the most intelligent readers one could possibly ever hope for. And so, you know, my father was a big classicist. I think he didn't read anything beyond Tolstoy. Like that was like the most modern he would get. He was more of a Sir Thomas Aquinas, you know, he was Blaise Pascal. He was sort of the antique guy. But my mother was a big lover of modern literature. And of course, you know, my parents were Colombian, so I had lots of South American writers in our house. I mean, not physical, you know, but books in our house. And my mother loved German. She loved Thomas Mann. She loved Heinrich Böll. She was just a really, really smart reader. And I think if you grow up reading great books, you can't help but imbibe that. If you read, you know, garbage, you know,
you write garbage.
That's a different thing. But, you know, I grew up reading Steinbeck and just, you know, just drawing from those stories and the way those stories are told. People ask me about the perspectives like you did before, but frankly, I kept on thinking of As I Lay Dying, that's told in different perspectives. That for me was sort of one of the big influences for Wonder, though nobody would ever see it. Also, a short story by Jorge Luis Borges called The House of Asterion, which is a first person, very short story, incredible story, about the Minotaur being trapped inside the maze, and just so beautiful. And so, you know, these were stories that kind of inspired me in terms of what I wanted to write about and the way I wanted to write it.
Did your parents ever write at home?
They were both writers. I mean, they were never published. Father wrote every day of his life, and my mother wrote poetry, you know, but they didn't have the opportunities that I did. For me, I did have the opportunity to have a job and also write, but their lives were different and they did not have the same opportunities. So I also felt it's nice to be able to live out one's life. And, you know, that's a very first generation thing. My parents were Colombian immigrants. You're very cognizant of the sacrifices they made so that you can have the life you have and have gotten the education you've gotten. And so you feel, you know, you feel not indebted, but you really do want to make them proud.
I'm first generation as well, so I completely get that. And also my mom grinding it into my head as well. It's like, you guys must do well because we gave up a lot for you guys to have a very good life. I was like,
exactly. Exactly. You kind of want to give it back. So,
absolutely.
You know, and unfortunately my mom never, I mean, she died before. I mean, she was always telling me that I was going to be a writer someday. So even when I would send her my book covers, like, Mom, look at this, you know, and I'd send it or I'd show them to her or whatever. And she'd always say, oh, this is beautiful. Oh, my goodness. But remember, you're a writer. Like, she was always like the little voice in my head. Don't give up that stuff. That's why I actually published under my RJ Palacio is a pseudonym. My name is Raquel Jaramillo, but Palacio was my mother's maiden name. And I just thought when I published Wonder that it would be a really nice way to honor her.
I think that's beautiful. I can get that when you were mentioning about your mom, like, having passed. So I'm sorry about that.
Oh, thank you.
But that's beautiful that you published under her maiden name. And I really admire and respect that. How long was your process of writing from beginning to the end writing Wonder?
For Wonder, when I would do my little closet writing, I wasn't very disciplined about it. I'd have outlines for stories. I'd start writing a book, and after 30 pages, when it got hard, I'd put it away. But when I started Wonder, that was the first time that I felt absolutely compelled to finish it. Having said that, you know, I did have a 9-to-5 job. I did have two kids. Yeah. Being a creative director at a company, you know, there's a lot of responsibility. You're a department head. You are managing other people. So it's more than a 9-to-5 job. It's more like an 8-to-6:30, mm-hmm. 7 job. Yes. So and, you know, and then I'd come home and help with the homework and do all that stuff. So I got into this routine once I started Wonder of basically writing in the middle of the night. It was the only quiet time I had, and I would write from about 12 to 3 in the morning. And I did that most nights for about a year and a half. I really kind of enjoyed that quiet time, you know, the middle of the night, very quiet. I felt like I was entering a world of these people, these characters of Wonder who were, it was like an alternate world for me. So it was kind of a really special time in my life, that writing in the middle of the night. I kind of miss it. I don't do it anymore because I don't have to. But at the time, that was really the only thing that worked for me in terms of really wanting to finish this book. And also, to be totally truthful, my husband and I, we had two kids in private school. It's like, okay, you know, let's get this other thing going on, you know, because it's expensive.
Yeah. That's so funny. Now, so now you're completely fully writing, right? Because you said you didn't have to do that anymore, which means that you have time in the day to write, yes?
Wonder came out in 2012, and I kept my day job throughout. I only left it last year.
Wow.
And that was because, having been in publishing, I know how hard it is to really, you know, make a living as a writer. You know,
yeah,
most writers have day jobs, and there's a good you know, my first advice to people is don't give up your day job. And I wasn't about to give up my wonderful job, which I love so much, because I kept on thinking that this whole Wonder thing, which kind of took everyone by surprise, it certainly took me by surprise. I kept on thinking, okay, well, you know, it's going to stop, you know, tomorrow it'll stop, and so on and so forth. It never occurred to me that, in fact, I remember when it first hit the New York Times list, you know, it hit at the number 10 spot about a month after it came out. And I remember coming home that night, and of course I was so happy. I know that the odds of hitting the New York Times list in publishing are very, very slim. And I remember coming home that night, and my husband and I were celebrating, and my younger son, who was about 7 at the time, he said, why are you so happy? And I said, well, you know what? It means, you know, my hitting the New York Times list means that next week, when it falls off again, which of course it will, I can say that I was a New York Times bestselling author. You know, at that moment, I thought that was as good as it was ever going to get. The idea that I hit the list at number 10, that was it. It was like, okay, I am grateful. Thank you. And that's it. And so when it didn't fall off the list the next week, but it kept on going higher and higher up, and that I couldn't believe it. I mean, you know, I couldn't believe that this was happening. And in any case, I've always tried to stay really humble about my expectations. So it wasn't really until last year, it was a year ago at this time, that I finally gave notice and I left my job, because I realized that I couldn't continue to do both. I couldn't continue to be a writer, an author, because being a writer and being an author are kind of two different things. Because, you know, when you're a writer, you're all alone, you're just writing your book. When you're an author, especially children's book author, there are all these other expectations, doing interviews and emails and doing events and visiting schools. And it's been an honor for me because, you know, I've spent the last 4 years going around to different schools across the country and sort of preaching kindness. So that's great. But it's, you know, that's a full-time job. I couldn't continue to do both well in a way that I would want to.
How has the transition been for you?
You know, there's always a little bit of bittersweetness to a lot of the decisions we make in life. I think you always have to, you know, when you're saying goodbye to one thing that you love, for another thing that you love, there's a little bit of the bittersweet in that. And I'm not about to complain because it was a great choice to have to make. I loved my job. I loved the collaborative spirit of publishing. I love being part of that. And I, you know, I did it for a long time, though. I have no regrets. And I gave it a good run. And I might do it again someday. Who knows? I don't think I've burned any bridges behind me. It's nice not to have to rush around anymore. That's the nicest part of this sort of transition for me, that I don't feel like I don't think I even realized how much I was rushing around every day before. I was always on my way to something or from something, or having, you know, a to-do list that was you know, really long every day. And that's kind of nice for me. It's also nice for me to be able to be home, that my younger son is now in the sixth grade and I'm home when he comes home, you know, which is really nice.
I love that. And it just almost makes you wonder, like, dang, how did I keep up with all that? Just like last year, you know, it's just kind of crazy. RJ, you've been amazing. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you. Thanks a lot.
That wraps up our episode with the super awesome RJ Palacio. RJ, I'm so honored to have you on the show, and thank you so much for your time. A heartfelt thank you to you, storytellers, for listening in. Don't forget to post your favorite quote from today's episode with RJ for your chance to win a copy of one of RJ's autographed books. Be sure to tag at 88 Cups of Tea and include hashtag 88 Cups of Tea so I can find you. If your social media account is privated, please remember to temporarily unblock it so I can see your contest entry. The deadline for the giveaway contest is Wednesday, April 27th at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that's 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have fun with it and good luck. To check out the books RJ mentions in her episode, be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/RJ Palacio. Please say hi to RJ on Twitter at RJ Palacio. I've been loving your messages and emails about the podcast and have been listening to what you're looking for. A lot of you have reached out asking about writing communities and classes, and I'm so excited to tell you more about Gotham Writers. If you're working on your own children's book, anything from a picture book to a young adult novel, I really want you to listen to why Gotham is an incredible asset to writers. They started in my favorite city of all time, New York City, my home where a lot of my dreams came true. Just like me, Gotham also believes that everyone has a story to tell, and they exist just so they can help writers like you tell your story better. You'll learn from teachers who are accomplished writers and are amazing at teaching. Through lectures, writing exercises, and workshopping, you learn how to enter the psyche of young people with a grown-up sense of craftsmanship. Gotham teaches writers all the elements of craft in a way that best resonates with young readers, and better yet, you'll learn how to entertain and enlighten young minds. On top of making progress on your work, Gotham will also introduce you to the ways of the business. For over 20 years, they've put a lot of heart and soul into creating a safe and structured environment for writers to learn. Be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/go/Gotham Writers to check out their classes. They have a super supportive staff that will help you find the course that's perfect for you. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.